You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Alongside the former Pro Bowler and All-Pro superstar, LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. LeVar, what's the worst no-show performance you were ever a part of as an athlete? Like, everybody's had, I would think, some sort of game where just, nobody had it. Obviously, it's so different in the NFL. My perspective is because you're putting something on tape for somebody else. But I'm just wondering, like, the worst team performance you've ever been a part of was when?
Oh, man. Worst team performance? That's a great question. I'll take it to, man, it could have been any one of the first five games that I played in when Marty Schottenheimer took over for us in Washington. Those first five games, they were just no-show games. Players were upset, older players, veteran players, future Hall of Famers. There was so much clashing between the coach and the players that we were just all out of whack, you know, and there was more fighting and arguing and bickering internally than there was focus on prepping for the games and being ready to play. And I don't know, man, that was a very, very difficult time in my life because I was having a Pro Bowl year. That was actually the first year I went to the Pro Bowl, was in 01. And I can just recall so much division and dissension and backstabbing.
You guys got beat 30-3, 37-0, 45-13, 23-9, and then 9-7 against the Cowboys, and you started out 0-5 on the year.
It was bad, bro.
Why did guys not like Marty? He never won the postseason, but he always won the regular season. Why did guys fight Marty Ball so?
Because Marty Ball was his way or the highway, and when you have that mentality with a Bruce Smith or a Daryl Green, it kind of, you know, that's you're running the risk of putting yourself in harm's way because those guys, they weren't with it. Like, imagine this. You got Marty in practice correcting the stance of Daryl Green in front of Fred Smoot and other guys that are younger guys that are on the team. I believe Chant was actually still on that team as well, right? So Marty's correcting Daryl Green's stance. Like, little things like that. Like, that might have not have sounded like anything.
No, I got it. That's like going up to Steph Curry and going like, hey, man, I think you should move. I think you should change your release a little bit.
That's like going up to – that's like taking over a team with no background history with Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen and that Bulls team, and say you came in and took over for Phil Jackson, and you're telling Mike how to spot up. You're telling Mike how to set up the offense or something technical about what he's doing. So it wasn't well received, and it was more like we were just so out of sorts. It was bad. Like, just looking back and thinking back on how terrible it was pretty bad. Like, people didn't like the weight room. We changed from traditional weights with machines to Olympic style training, which now is like what everybody does, right?
Right.
But nobody wanted to do it. You know, nobody wanted to power cling and all that type of stuff.
What's funny is, like, Marty Schottenheimer comes in, you know, obviously, and he puts his brother's defensive coordinator,
yep,
you know, makes all these, and you end up turns the season around at the end, 8-8, whatever. But what's interesting is, you know, they hire Steve Spurrier, who's, I mean, couldn't be,
nobody's fault. Nobody's
right.
fault. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not good, right? Like, his.
I could give you parts of that. you know, where we went undefeated in the preseason and couldn't win a game once we started regular season.
Right.
I mean, that question is a loaded question for me because much of my pro career, we sucked.
Yes.
So you could just pick a season and be like, you know, oh, wow, y'all were no shows more than you were shows.
No, but I think the Marty Schottenheimer piece is really interesting. So yesterday, in case you're like, why are they talking about the worst moments of LeVar's career? Okay, that wasn't really the intent. The intent was to draw some sort of parallel to yesterday. Kawhi Leonard has his first like load management game, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, my God, they just get stomped by a Dallas team who got eviscerated, could not stop the Lakers two nights before. Obviously, still playing in L.A. They have 27 points at the half, right? So you're down 77 to 27 at the half. 77-27. I get that it's just one game. I get that the Clippers were 2-0 and they sat their best player. But I mean, you become like the laughing stock of the league when that happens. If you walk into Clippers practice today, LeVar Arrington, what do you say?
I think they have to adopt the approach that this is a team that has had so much weight, so much pressure put on them to be something that everybody has wanted. Or that is a Clippers fan or a Clippers enthusiast has wanted to see happen, which is this team get to the next level. And so if I'm talking to the Clippers, I think they really have to get to a place of where they're comfortable and confident with what their approach is and understand that talent-wise, they are definitely good enough to be able to accomplish what they're wanting to accomplish. But they have to have a singular focus. And within that singular focus, you can have many focuses, but they have to really, really dial in what their singular focus is as a group, and they have to marry to it. They have to commit to the fact that this is what they're going to do, and if we're going to do it, this is how we got to go about doing it, and we can't deviate from the plan. And I think they were largely in part doing that last season for a long time. And then I just think that it got very combative. It got very confrontational internally with them. And then the whole hitting of COVID and the way it impacted one of their star players. I mean, mentally and emotionally speaking, Paul George was different.
I think they're going to have to get rid of Lou Williams. I mean, if you look yesterday, he only played 9 minutes. He was part of that first half kind of debacle. I think something's going on. Remember, he signed a contract, only $8 million a year, and people thought, man, you could have gotten a lot more on the open market. Now they have Reggie Jackson getting way more minutes than him. That was a trade made when everybody was hurt last year. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's something going on there where Lou was not – normally you would think when Lou Williams, hey, we don't have Kawhi. Bro, you're going to get shots today, right? Like,
right.
But – he hadn't been the same since the lemon pepper wings.
Right.
Yeah, the lemon pepper wings incident. And they haven't looked at him the same. And, you know, like...
It's like Haskins, right? I mean, yes. Honestly speaking, I find it interesting. Why would you not think that people don't fool with you when you show them you don't fool with them? Right? I mean, let's be honest here. Why should I have an affinity for my teammate that felt as though what he was doing was more important than us, right?
It's a great point.
So it's a great.
I would say for Lou Williams, Lou's probably take is like, look, this is who I've always been. I've never deviated.
Doesn't make it right. There's a lot.
I didn't say it is. Yeah, I'm just saying from his perspective, sure. Like, yo, look, I've been in the league for 10 years. Everybody knows who I am and how I roll. And you signed me, and now all of a sudden I'm supposed to be somebody different. Like that's. I show up and I get buckets. That's who I am. And yeah, apparently they do want him to be somebody else and he's not willing to play along.
Well, I think if that's the response to it and that's the truth of it, then he does have to go. Because that becomes toxic. That's what you just said is a toxic way of what it would be. Because to me, if you're doing something that is compromising yourself and your teammates and the season and the league, then to say that it is what it is, because that's who I am, that's who I've always been, and that's who I'm going to be, you're basically saying that I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to accept the duties of and the accountability of what everybody else is doing. I'm going to be me. And if that's the truth, that is a cancer. And you know what happens when cancer is left untreated. We all know.
And now he sprained his left wrist or whatever, but he just didn't seem into it when he was in it. So that whole part to it is it really fascinating, though, on what happens with the Clippers over the next couple of weeks here in reaction to this, right? Like, if it's really just a, hey, we just no-showed and they hit everything and we weren't into it, it was a Sunday, dudes were into fantasy football, it doesn't make it acceptable, but it's does make it explainable.
It's
embarrassing. That's an embarrassing one, right?
That's an embarrassing
down 50
moment.
At the half?
Yeah.
At the half? That's hard to do. I don't know how you.
How do you justify that as a pro? Like, you're a professional and you have an elite group. How do you, and as the coach, how do you make sense of that? You know, because this is a big moment for, and I wanted to bring this up when we bring on Rick, but this is a big moment for Tyronn Lue. Like, and if you think about it, he had great success in Cleveland, built his reputation, got a championship. What are you going to be able to do? What are you going to say if you can't bring together this talented group that you have in LA and possibly accomplish at the same level when you're sitting there listening to how Doc Rivers was trying to handle things and ultimately him trying to make guys conform and be more responsible led to his departure. You know, what do you do?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Ty Lue handles. I mean, this is really what you get paid for, right? Is how you handle adversity, how you handle the personalities. The X in Owen obviously becomes more part of the gig once you get to the postseason. But everyone seems to know that the chemistry issues are
always there.
What led to the downfall of the Clippers last year, as opposed to Lakers, who, you know, I think there were some moments there where their chemistry could have been called into question in the bubble. But they figured it out, and they ended up having an unbelievably united team. It wasn't the best team in terms of ability to score. It wasn't a perfectly complete team, but they played great team complementary basketball and won based upon their defense and toughness and chemistry. And obviously LeBron and AD.
Their length was too much for everybody.
Right. And so you put all those together, and you end up being an NBA champion. The Clippers have, you know, look like, if you look at that roster again, first game of the season, you like what you see, but it's these type of things which may lead you to believe there's more issues under the hood. All right, Rick Bucher is going to join us upcoming next. How big an issue is one game in December, third game of the year, but down 50 at the half for the Clippers? Plus, what does he see from the Lakers early on? Can the Warriors do anything to try and get away from what feels like a sinking ship? You know, we've seen pretty good performances from the Nets early on in the season. We've got a lot to catch up with Rick Bucher upcoming. Alongside LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. That's upcoming next. But first, ever wonder just how far the extra mile really goes? Well, drive a Mercedes-Benz van and you'll find out. They offer a variety of vans, like the durable Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or the versatile Mercedes-Benz Metris. Each is tailored to match your work or play lifestyle, with options like the blind spot assist and active lane keeping assist, plus MBUX voice command technology for directions, weather forecast, comfort control, and more. Now, what better way to go the extra mile than in your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van? You can win by entering the Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. Just head to foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com to enter and get official rules for a chance to win a Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van equipped with TVs and wood pellet grills. Get all the information and entry details at foxsportsradio.com or danpatrick.com. Sweepstakes ends January 24th, 2021. Mercedes-Benz vans, some equipment described as optional.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Along with LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's welcome him in. You see both of these guys together at times on Speak for Yourself on Fox Sports 1. He's Rick Bucher, Fox Sports 1's NBA analyst, also writes for Bleacher Report. And, Buke, what do you say about the Clippers' complete no-show yesterday against the Dallas Mavericks?
They are who we learned they are in the bubble. Oof. It is, if you had any question about the leadership factor with the team, I thought that yesterday confirmed that they haven't fixed that problem with or without Kawhi. Yeah, you got an early start. Yeah, today after, well, I'm a little confused. Paul George was telling me that Saturday was Christmas, and I would have sworn that Friday was Christmas. But to me, look, we've seen this happens all the time. Games get out of hand. You miss open shots, especially in today's NBA, the ability to knock down threes. You got one team that's on a, you know, wants to prove something because they've had a couple of bad losses. You got another team that is at home and it's an early start and they're feeling themselves a little bit and they just don't have it. But the complete collapse and the inability to have that one moment where you go, you know what, we're not going to accept this. We're going to dig in. We're going to try to get something done. I'm not saying that they would have won, but the Clippers never had that moment. They never had that moment of resistance. And to me, that goes to the heart of leadership. And if you thought that Tyronn Lue was going to have a different effect on this team than Doc Rivers, you found out otherwise. And I don't want to make too much of one game, but to me, if I had suspicions that they really hadn't fixed their root problem from the bubble, and that the bubble exposed something that was a true Achilles heel, and yesterday just confirmed my suspicions that that thing has not been fixed.
It's a great point you make, and guys, let me kind of like further it. I actually think, in many ways, COVID and, you know, this entire last 12 months, as it's happened in all businesses, right? Like, yep. retail is feels like it's dead. Well, it was dying anyway. Restaurants have been crushed by this thing, right? The truth is that the restaurants were it's always been a hard business, and it's been made more difficult recently because of, yep, DoorDash and those types of, right? So what's happened in business has only kind of sped up. Movie theaters, right, may not come back online as things are going directly to your home, directly to a streaming service. All these things are getting exposed. It's not problems that arise because of the bubble, but they get made more pronounced. That said, how would you go about fixing it if you're the Clippers?
I don't know that there's an easy fix. Because it really comes down to the, I mean, look, you can have all the team meetings you want. You can have the, the kumbayas. Ultimately, it has to be a little bit like, you have to have players. You have to have star players that you don't want to disappoint. I hate to reference The Last Dance, but, you know, whether the guys, the rest of the Bulls liked Jordan or didn't like Jordan, you heard him say it. Judd Bushler said it definitively. Like, we didn't want to let him down. I believe that the Warriors, as bad as they are right now, when they see an opportunity to win, they don't want to let Steph Curry down. The guys that you are the stars on the team, you don't want to let them down. You don't want them to be embarrassed. You don't want to be embarrassed yourself, but there's also a feeling like, we want to play for this guy because we know how good he is and how good he makes us. And I'm just not sure there's anybody. Like, do the Clippers look at their leadership of Kawhi and Paul George and go, you know what, I don't want to see that guy lose. I want to play hard for that guy. I'm just not sure that feeling exists on the Clippers. And I don't know that there's a guy there that they feel that way about. So there is no easy solution. as I said at the beginning, they are who they are. Unless they have a major transformation, I believe that's going to be a continuing problem. They're good enough to beat a lot of teams, but do they have that it factor, that it guy that is going to carry them there and that they're all going to play for and that they're going to rally around? I don't see that guy.
Slick, when you look at this team, and you just mentioned the makeup of the lack of leadership, I look at it from the perspective of how Tyronn Lue was there last year as an assistant. So he's elevated. You saw something in what you felt his leadership qualities could be that could possibly bring, you know, unite these guys together as a solution. You didn't go to a whole nother staff. You promote it from within.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to understand if there is a lack of leadership by your big gun star players, and you promote Ty Lue as the head coach, isn't that a failure on a higher level than the player and the coach then?
Yeah, I'm with you. I LeVar, I did not think that was going to be a solution. There was somebody who was there present, and I felt that was a missing piece last year on the coaching staff. It's one thing you elevate Ty Lue. That's fine. But what you were missing was the Tom Thibodeau to Doc Rivers in Boston. That guy who was going to be the bad cop to your good cop. The guy who was going to demand certain things. They didn't add that to the roster. You could elevate Ty Lue because of his relationship with Kawhi and Paul, but you have to have that guy that was going to demand discipline and excellence when nobody else was. And I'd say this too, and this is what makes it really difficult. And we've seen it with plenty of teams. You know, you have those. You can't say no to superstars, right? So they want to come play for you. If you've got a chance to get them, you get them. But can they close the deal? Are they, especially if you get enough talent together where people look at you and say you're supposed to win a championship, are your stars, are your best players, your hardest workers and the guys that can lead you there? That's the question. And I just, you know, I feel as if what we've learned about Kawhi in winning in Toronto and San Antonio is that he might have been the best player in both of those instances, but not the leader of either of those teams. And that was the mistake we made, maybe in part because he's so quiet. We thought he's one of those silent types, you know, the silent leader.
Right.
The reality is, well, he wasn't the guy that was the driving force of those teams, and the Clippers are finding that out.
I'll be interested to see how they react to all of this and like what bounce back is. I feel like there's something up there with Lou Williams where, and I know he sprained his wrist or whatever, but where there's like, he doesn't feel like I'm sure he's not an early game sort of guy, but it doesn't feel like he's down for the, I would have thought with no Kawhi, he would have come out there just firing yesterday. Yeah. And he looked like a guy who had a million places he wanted to be, and Staples was not atop that list. Rick Bucher joining us. Let's check in on James Harden. He has played one game. He did drop 44 and 17 in an overtime loss to Portland. So clearly, no matter what we think of his physical shape, he's in bucket getting shape. What's his status look like in Houston?
Well, the problem is that with games like the one that he gave Portland, it only makes the Rockets more insistent on getting the full bag for him. What I was told is that they want something along the lines of an Anthony Davis deal for James Harden, which is, you know, 2-3 young talented players and 3 first round picks is what ultimately the Pelicans got for Anthony Davis, and including guys like, you know, all-star material like Brandon Ingram. So that is the challenge. The price is not going down with wins like that. And you also have a brand new GM, Raphael Stone, who is trying to make his mark and doesn't want his first move to be 10 cents on the dollar for a star of Harden's magnitude. So I still hear that if there's a team that's going to make a move, it's going to be Philadelphia. But I was also told yesterday, like, don't expect something to happen anytime soon, because they're not lowering their price at this point. I've had executives tell me, look, you could make a case he's the best offensive player in the game right now. So why would you not try to get everything you can for him if indeed you're going to acquiesce and move him?
Rick Bucher is our guest here on the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. All right, what do you make of what we've seen from the Nets so far?
I thought coming in that they would be the best offensive team that in the league. I mean, they're just a fright, especially the way Kevin Durant is playing. Kyrie seems to be on one too, but I just don't know if, like, where's their defensive presence? Who's the driving force at that end? Who organizes them at that end? I don't see that guy.
Did you see the news today about Spencer? For people who are just joining us, Spencer did when he partially tore an ACL.
So. I did. But like he's an interesting character. I mean, during the offseason, they were looking to move him. So I don't see him as an essential piece of the chemistry or the equation. I'm sorry to see it, but ultimately that doesn't change a whole lot for them when it comes to, again, it's where's the bar set? Like, I don't know, we would have had this conversation about the Clippers if they weren't considered the favorite to win the championship last year. And people are still looking at them thinking, okay, will they play for redemption this year? It's the same with the Nets. The Nets, at the very least, are supposed to be in the conference finals, if not coming out of the East, is what the projection is. And I just don't know that defensively they're good enough. Offensively, I think they're going to be a terror. Regular season, I think they're going to be a terror. Postseason, unless something changes with them defensively and just also the vibe. I'd like to feel like with everything about them, you know, Kyrie being able to rehab his image, KD coming back from an injury that took a year from him, I wish I felt like they were more joyous in the way that they played. I mean, they could be such a great story.
I know.
And yet they're playing with like this
anger.
Chip.
Yeah.
I'm wondering where it came. Like, where's that coming from? I mean, you're going to have opportunity to play with anger. You're going to have things that are going to tick you off. But if it's just a general dissatisfaction with whatever, it's a long season to not find the joy in what should be a joyous situation for the Nets right now.
All right, last thing. Warriors did lost in all the footballs. They did beat the Bulls yesterday by one.
Yeah.
But that's after 26 and 39 point losses to playoff teams. I don't love the construction. I understand the Klay thing set them back substantially, but I don't like the rest of the construction because they don't have other guys that can handle and create, and that's really what Steph needs because he's as good or better off the ball as he is on the ball.
Yep.
Is there any fixing the Warriors this season?
I don't see it just because, and you make a good point about not having other playmakers, and Draymond Green, whenever he gets back, will help that. But what Draymond Green can't fix is that they used to be a very high IQ team.
Yes, and Steph mentioned this after their second loss, that they were not, needed to improve their basketball IQ, which doesn't improve mid-season for an NBA team.
No, and especially because, and Steve has already conceded. He's like, I'm just going to simplify everything. It's not like we have a system that these guys will eventually get. He's like, oh, I got guys who can't play the way we are used to playing. So we're going to have to play a different way. And the problem is that actually the way Steph plays compounds that, because Steph at his best plays kind of a reckless game. And if everybody else is playing buttoned up, you can live with the ups and downs of that. If you ask him to play an uber-efficient game, particularly offensively, you take away some of the magic of Steph Curry.
Butte, great stuff. Happy New Year. Hope you guys had a great Christmas, and we will definitely talk and see you soon.
All right, Slicks.
Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Happy holidays.
You too. Careful who you call gentlemen there, Butte. With LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. Who are the most dangerous teams heading into the NFL's postseason? LeVar will tell us upcoming next in the Dan Patrick Show.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Dan Patrick Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. Arguably the greatest B-side hit in the 1990s. A little Yellow Ledbetter for you. Jeff Wilson joins us from the 49ers tomorrow. LeVar Arrington, you'll see him on the TV side on Speak for Yourself. Of course, you can hear him Saturdays on Fox Sports Radio as well. Hey, how is that show going? That is an awesome show.
It's going well. Feel really good about it. Our last show was really, really powerful. A lot of good stuff that's being discussed and brought to the forefront in just a different manner and a different way. So it's been good, man. Super positive.
If you aren't aware, it's called Up on Game. Just download the podcast. It's excellent. And he's joined by two other former NFL stars, Plaxico Burress and TJ Houshmandzadeh. So called Up on Game. You can hear it on Fox Sports Radio, but you can also download the podcast. LeVar Arrington joining us. Okay, so look, we talked earlier that Pittsburgh. So I guess my question is, when you watch Ben yesterday with Pittsburgh, down to a good defense, one that everybody respects, 24-7, they come back. It's not just that they won, it's the way in which they won, him making throws that people thought he could no longer make. Does that change your perspective on Pittsburgh's viability in the postseason?
I think they can be viable in the postseason. I mean, they were a third seed the year they won the Super Bowl, and it's a different team. It's a long time ago, but it's the DNA of the team. They can play from on their back. They can be an underdog and be able to do some of the things that they need to do. But I think the most dangerous team going into the playoffs in the AFC outside of the Kansas City Chiefs is the Buffalo Bills. I really feel as though they have caught on in a way where they could be very dangerous as a team in that division. So guys like Kansas City are going to have to be mindful of what Buffalo is bringing to the table, because they could very well be that team that clips a team like, you know, the Steelers or the Kansas City Chiefs. And then in the NFC, I think, again, you have the top two guys when you're looking at Green Bay, you're looking at New Orleans. But the one team that is very intriguing right now is Tampa Bay. You know, everybody talks about how old and how done Tom Brady is, and he can't throw the ball downfield, and he turns the ball over. I don't know if y'all were watching the game, and I know you'll sit there and you'll say, I was the Detroit Lions, so it's not a qualifier, but it's the pros. It is a qualifier. I could guarantee the people saying that it was the Lions, they wouldn't be able to beat the Lions if they had a team that was on the field playing the Lions. And so when you look at what they were able to accomplish, the way that they accomplished it, the way their defense is playing, they're going to be a dangerous team. Those are two really dangerous teams, AFC, NFC, that I'm looking at making a little noise in the playoffs.
Yeah, that one's a hard one, because I would agree with you. Brady looked incredible. Incredible. But there's also that was a no-show by Detroit. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, no pressure. And if you give a guy like that indoors a chance to throw, and he's got all those weapons. So that's a really hard one to gauge. Was it Brady or was it the competition? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's a little bit of both. You mentioned the Bills. We'll see the Bills tonight against the New England Patriots. My question becomes, like, why do the Patriots keep throwing Cam Newton out there?
Well, I think Cam served his purpose for for New England this year, which was to not lose hope of what New England is without Tom Brady. And even though they did not have a playoff caliber year, they were competitive. Right. And I don't think they were confident that Jarrett Stidham would be the answer for them to be as competitive as they were this season, Doug. So when you look at what Cam did Josh McDaniels a favor. He did Bill Belichick a favor. He did New England a favor by coming there and being who he was, because as poorly as you can say he's played at times, it's high enough a level where you can actually give New England a flyer on the season and what they've accomplished.
I don't know, man. He just can't throw anymore. Just can't throw. Like,
this is one of his best seasons statistically. It's interesting because, again, the team itself is in a depleted state. It is just not a team.
No, they had eight opt-outs.
Which is big.
You know, Edelman got hurt. I mean, you lose the defensive player of the year in the league for, you know, half the season as well. Their wide receiving core wasn't good to begin with, and then you lose Julian Edelman. And so you throw into Jacoby Myers and Demir Byrd. But still competitive. Yes, but the misfires, and it's like painful to watch a guy who he may never been accurate, but he had an absolute cannon for an arm, and obviously something's going on that shoulder where he just can't dial it up the way
do you think his value went down or up this year?
Down. Here's what I think. I think that
down.
I think that people in the league say, like, man, Cam Newton, he's a hell of a guy, right? Because he's taken on criticism. He's admitted he hasn't played well. You know, he's taken just a savage beating in terms of, you know, I'm sure he's running the ball even more than he didn't want to run it 122 times, right? That's not at this point in his career. But he's done so with a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I think everybody, that helps his value. And maybe it makes you think that he'll be a backup. But he can't be a starting quarterback anymore the way he throws football.
Mm. See, I think his value went up. And the reason why I think his value went up is because the biggest questions coming into the season for most onlookers and prognosticators was his health. And can he stay healthy? Can he lead the team? He answered tremendously that he can lead a team and he could stay healthy.
Yeah, but I agree with you, and that was the question, but it was the health of his shoulder. And his shoulder's not healthy. Like, there's no explanation for Cam Newton not being able to throw a football other than there's something wrong with the shoulder still.
Or he doesn't have people that can get open.
But when you see some of these misfires,
he's running. He's running the ball and he's lowering his shoulder. His shoulder can't be in that bad a shape. It could be combinations of a few different things. One, you don't have the talent at receiver. Two, you don't have the continuity of the offense between him and the receivers, and because he's new and he had to deal with a COVID year. There are so many ways you could spin why he's not throwing the ball outside of the health of his shoulder. I mean, honestly, this is the first time I'm even hearing it, like, from you. It's the first time. Like, as far as listening to the criticisms of Cam, it really has been just a matter of getting into tune with what the complexities of the offense that he's playing in, and can he stay healthy? Like, those have been the ongoing conversations internally as well as from the media about him. I think his value has actually gone up, because if I have a team that has a running attack and has a few more weapons at the receiver's position, if I'm New England, I'm thinking if I have a few more guys at the receiver's position and we can get healthy and move forward, we might be better with Cam for the next year or two at the helm. So that's just my take on it, though.
Can we do a dinner? Can we bet a dinner or a drink or something on that he's not a starting quarterback next year in the league? And it's not out of animus for anything of Cam. It's just the idea that I think his shoulder shot.
I'll take that. We could do a bottle.
All right,
we'll do a bottle.
We'll do a bottle. Something more in my price range than in the former All-Pros price range. LeVar Arrington, Doug Gottlieb here on the Dan Patrick Show. Okay, what about Josh Allen, there's like, look, Brian Daboll's done an amazing job, and obviously adding Stephon Diggs, which I got to be honest with you, I thought it might be a disaster, only in that Josh Allen has a reputation of being so inaccurate that no matter how open Stephon Diggs is, you got to have a guy that puts it close to him. It's been an incredible marriage, you're a buyer into Buffalo. How has Josh Allen gone from a guy who everybody thinks is too inaccurate to a guy that people seem to be buying into?
Well, he's accepted the challenge, Doug. And then during this offseason, he actually went to a specialist and he trained on the mechanics of how he throws the ball, how he holds the ball, the way he delivers the ball, releases the ball, what he's looking at. And it's like this very sophisticated scientific approach because he always had a strong arm. But his mechanics weren't always the best. Maybe his footwork, little nuances needed to take place for him to improve. And go figure. He went and he worked to develop more skill to be able to be a better thrower. You have those professionals that handle things like Dwayne Haskins. And you have guys who handle it like Josh Allen. And I think that there you can't say enough about his commitment to improving himself, to becoming more of a master of his craft. And clearly, when you put in the time and the effort and the energy to improve yourself and you can see it play out the way that it has for him, that's always a great story. It's a great story for our game. It's a great story for him. It's a great story for our youth. There were so many things that could have distracted him from not taking that road that he did to improve himself during COVID, but he did, and it's paying dividends for him, and it's paying dividends for his team.
All right, most important thing is that the Bills are a 7-point favorite on the road in New England. Who do you like?
Oh, the Bills are going to win. The Bills are going to win that game.
Can they win? Will they win by more than a touchdown?
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, they will.
You know, it's interesting. You know, they clinched the AFCs for the first time since 1995, and they had all these fans waiting for them. How they handle that success is as interesting as the fact that they have had that success. All right, Niners running back Jeff Wilson will join us tomorrow. And LeVar, again, that podcast is up on game.
That's right.
Up on game.
Yeah, check it out.
You should absolutely check it out. For LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. We'll be with you tomorrow here on the Dan Patrick Show, Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.